Welcome to Dancing in the Gap with Arneena Kashtan, Session 6.
The words dancing in the gap of uncertainty and embracing discomfort as a path to true freedom for me are very meaningful. And for the topic of today, they are especially meaningful because to speak about uncertainty and discomfort and freedom in the context of dependence, independence and interdependence is very fascinating. I find it especially challenging. I would like to hear from any of you, whoever wants to start, how was it for you to look into this subject and what you'd like to inquire into in our session today?
I was intrigued with learning about more the section, Everyone Matters, and distinguishing between holding everyone's needs with care and altruism or selflessness.
Yes.
I'm not really sure what you mean by that.
What came up for you when you thought of holding other people with care and selflessness? What does it mean to you when you think selflessness? Is it like kernel expanding or cringing?
Cringing, because the me part of it is being diminished because I have, you know, being selfless. Like some kind of sacrifice.
Right. It sounds like giving up on my own needs or on myself, whatever is true for me in the moment. Does it ring the same to you?
Yeah.
I think it connects to the value of really close to sacrifice. It sounds more beautiful to be like that with other people. You know, many mothers in their relationship with kids, I find that they act from this place. I will sacrifice myself for you. When we start working with people, especially parents, it's very hard for them to define needs as mine. So much easier to say she or he will feel better if. It's like I'm doing this for their good. And it's very hard to notice that it's a self. It's me who's doing this for the other person. Because it is happening through me. Even if I'm sacrificing something, there is a me that's sacrificing itself. When we look at either, we can call it NVC consciousness or interdependence, if there is one party that is giving up on itself, on her or his needs, then we are not in interdependence. We are somewhere else, which is a lot more painful to be in. On the other hand, if I'm saying I really want to take care of this person, or again, if I stay with the example of the mother, it's like almost on an instinctual level, I'm taking care of the child. And yet, I want to be conscious, which for me is really being aware of the interdependence between us, meaning there is a me and there is a you, even if we are so connected and close that it's sometimes confusing who is who. But there is still something that I really want to hold you with care, a lot of care, especially when you're very young. I know that you are depending on me, so I'm really giving a lot of me to you. But then if I am not taking care of me, meaning I'm selfless, then I might end up really empty. So who is going to be there to keep giving? That's usually my concern, thinking of selflessness, other than holding with care, which doesn't mean that I have to meet your needs at all times. More clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So who wants to add to the pot of thinking?
As I read through the handout, a couple of things stood out for me. These phrases, one was that we matter beyond ourselves, and the idea of risking our significance and trusting that our actions are meaningful, acting on our intentions to contribute. Yeah, there's something important in there for me.
Okay, so you have anything in particular, that, like a specific example, or just a general notion around this? I always prefer a specific example so we can work with something and might go deeper.
I've been interested for a while in teaching some of the things that I know. I'm getting into the study of nonviolent communication. It's had such an impact on my life and my relationship primarily with myself and also with other people that I really feel a strong urge to share this with other people. It feels like a gift to me that I want to pass on to other people. And for a long time, I have not taken any steps or moved forward with that intention. And I think a lot of what goes on is thinking, well, there are so many people who know so much more about it than I do, and what do I have to contribute? Wanting to do justice to these ideas and do it in a competent way that people are going to get something out of it. So a lot of things have gotten in the way of my moving forward with that. But I just made a first presentation, sort of got my feet wet. What came up when I read these words was, you know, in my head, I can tell you something different about mattering beyond myself and the value of my contribution, but my body is kind of lagging behind. When those things come up, I still do have this reaction that something like shame or not feeling very good about what I can offer, and it seems like part of my tissues in some way.
For you, how does it connect to our particular subject of today in connection to dependence or independence or interdependence?
And somehow it didn't seem like it flowed completely with the idea of self-sufficiency versus interdependence. But when I think about it now, it has to do completely with valuing myself, not just my own needs and my own need to make a contribution to connect with other people, but valuing that I have something worth contributing.
Okay, so what is challenging for you to really accept that you have something valuable, and it doesn't have to be as valuable as whatever, but just valuable?
I've had this belief for most of my life that if somebody else can do something with much more experience and much more expertise, then they should do it, and I should just back away, and, you know, my offering is not worthy.
Besides feeling sad, really sad when I hear that, and especially I do want to give you an evaluation, that when I hear you speak, it is so clear to me that you have something to offer. But this is an evaluation, so it doesn't count, so don't write it down. But I'm serious. I'm actually serious. It's so sad to hear.
For me, too.
Of course it is for you. You're in your life. I'm just a guest. But you're holding a belief that so many people have, that we lose sense of have value for who we are. For your life experience. Your life experience is different than anyone else's. So why would someone else be more important or valuable than you? Convince me.
Well, the arguments, the story that goes on in my head is, this is a funny story, actually. The story is, well, there are people who have so much more experience and practice more at teaching and speaking and connecting with people around these subjects, and they have much more experience, so they're better equipped to do it. And yet, when I think about it, the only way to get experience is to just jump in and do it and get my own experience.
So what do you think is missing for you to be able to do this jump?
Trust in myself.
Okay, so that would be the deepest need for you to look into and to really be with it. Can you just now breathe into this need and really, really, without having any sense to it, not add any expectation or request or demand, anything. Just sense how you want to trust yourself. Just as an entity, you understand what I'm saying? Forget about why we came into it. Just sense the need to trust yourself and tell me what comes up.
When I ask myself that question directly, I lose connection with it.
Yes, I guess there's some fear there. What did you ask yourself? How did you phrase the question?
I think your question was, what's missing in being able to fully trust myself?
Forget the question. It's not important. Where I'm aiming at is for you to be able to connect with a need. Anything else is really not important. So what is it for you? What does it mean for you to trust yourself? How does it look like? What is it inside of you? What does it look like when you do trust yourself?
when I trust myself, I feel solid, both feet fully planted on the ground, not wobbly or tiptoeing to catch my balance.
Yeah.
I also feel myself kind of living right in the middle of me and looking outward rather than standing behind myself looking at me.
I love those words. So can you feel it right now, that sensation of being right in the middle of you?
Yeah.
Okay. So from that place, can you imagine yourself having value as a human being?
From that place, there just feels like no question of having value.
No question. When you are in that place.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you sense how this is truer than any other story? It has to do with comparing yourself when you are out of yourself with other people. When you're out of yourself, you're not connected to the truth of who you are. When you are in you, in the middle of you, you can jump anywhere. You can dance. I feel it.
Well, interestingly, when I did that first presentation, that was the experience that I had. Felt like things were flowing naturally, and I felt connected with people who were participating. Later on, I stepped back into looking it over and thinking about what was working and what didn't work as well. But I, you know, at the moment, while I was in the experience, I was right there in the middle of me. It was a good place to move forward from.
Oh, yeah. I love that place. And I love the other place, too, when I have the observing part in me and I can learn without guilt how I can be more effective or take care of my needs better than I did or take care of other needs better of other people better than I did without guilt, without self-blame, and really stay in the network of being with other people more and more with consciousness. I think this is what you're after.
It's easy for me to lose that place and lose that grounding.
Yeah.
I was glad it was there for this first presentation, but obviously that other feeling is still there. I'm aware somewhere because as I read through the handout, you know, I could still feel that reaction, the idea of mattering and having something to contribute and trusting that our actions are meaningful. Those words touch that place again. So I want to be compassionate with that place that still feels tender there and also cultivate more ability to be in that trusting place.
Yes. And I believe that if you cultivate the ability to be compassionate when you are not as you intended to be, then you can trust it. You can trust you. You can always come back to you without self-blame, so you can really trust that you can be there for yourself. And ideally, you're done with the presentation. You can ask for feedback so that interdependence is in action. You can ask people which needs of theirs were met by your presentation. And what's the worst that can happen? They would say some needs were not met, or what?
That's wonderful information to have.
Yes. I mean, again, if you can hold it with compassion, there is only constant learning. It's only when fear and guilt come in the picture that you lose track of what you're doing, which is learning and growing and connecting more and more with yourself and with others as you go. You sound like softer than in the beginning.
Yeah, it feels more relaxed or eased inside.
What else do we need in this life? Let's be ourselves and have some ease about it. So, I want to look for ways to incorporate this conversation or others to come into our main subject of cultural imperatives. And if you still have something you want to look at in this context, I'm willing to go on. Or if someone else would like to jump in and add something from yourselves, understanding independence, dependence, and interdependence. We can look at the subject of economy, if that speaks to you, because for me it's very exciting what it means. So who would like to step in?
I will. Shifting to autonomy is a struggle because there's conflict. And the wonderful thing about this particular subject, interdependence, is brought up for me this when I got into the part about willingness to be moved and clarifying for myself following the steps, the questions, and meeting myself in these places in relationship with someone else. So much of my struggle for autonomy, it's a childish struggle. It's something that is patterned and habitual, and this is bringing me into a new awareness of definition based in interdependence. It's shifted my whole approach to a different place of standing with it and being with it. That
let's look at the definitions, and I really want to say childish. I want to just point out that I'm sure you know that this is a judgment, or you were not aware of it in the moment.
I
know your autonomy, even if it's childish, and childish for me is a very, very big compliment that is usually used in a negative connotation. So when you say childish, what did you mean?
It comes from a place early in my life when I was powerless. I had this deep need for choices and feeling a quality of self-empowerment that would build my self-esteem and a confidence to be able to thrive in the world. And so I think from an early age, I fought for that in one way or another, whether it was, I was always caught in that struggle to clarify my presence in the world, and autonomy was how I defined it.
I think I have some understanding inside of me that many times when we say autonomy, it has a sense of rebellion into it. When I say autonomy, and I mean I want to do what I want to do when I want to do it, or I am the one deciding about my actions, I don't think that this is the full freedom that we mean when we say autonomy in the sense of choice. When I come into autonomy as a reaction to someone else's behavior towards me, in a very paradoxical way, it is a dependent need. When I'm looking for independence, it doesn't give me that sense in its fullest power. But when I come into what do I want to do, when I come and when I act out of my center, when I am in touch with my own internal part, where choice resides, then I think is what I would like to feel as autonomy. Namely, I am in full choice of what I would like to do, of which needs of mine I want to attend, of which needs of others I want to attend to. So it will include the others, even though it's called autonomy.
Yes. Yes. The shift has come because I think that what has happened is I just simply got stuck in a pattern of struggling to have choices to actually even be in a quality of relationship with others that would be inclusive, and experiencing a quality of interdependence that I can feel in my body, but I can't experience most times in relationships because, I mean, I'm learning. The shift has occurred from this perspective shift, that understanding interdependence as such an important part of even autonomy.
Yes. Yes.
That I'm able to consider all of these questions and all of this material that you have refined and posed possibilities for exploration have simply allowed a deeper connection to what is real and authentic within my being. And from that place, then I can begin to experience what I truly know about, like you just defined as true autonomy.
I think you're also somehow referring to the section that is called willingness to be moved. And moving out of a really choiceful place, and I really say patience and open to the existence of the other in the network of interdependence, it is not that I only want to take care of my needs at your expense. Not only that I don't want that, it's the opposite. I am willing to let you enter in my heart so that I am willing to have my needs shift out of choice. Out of choice means I want to hold you with care and I want to hold myself with care in the same time, juggling as it may, because it's not easy and it's not something that I grew up into. I mean, it's not in my culture, it's not in my background, but I want to learn that. For me, what I'm hearing from you, this has been a lot of my shifting, because there is so much fear in only taking care of my needs and not trusting that they matter. So I have to become independent. But if I can rely on myself, and I can rely on that my needs matter, then it's much easier to start trusting that I can even listen to you without fear and be willing to move towards. Does it make sense to you?
Yes, certainly. You have clearly articulated and met my need for clarity with this, because it is a deep substrata shift within my being. And simultaneously to the shift, there's automatically more presence and more ability to be in the center of myself, in the middle of my life, within, and that whole spatial experience of being able to listen and being able to just hold a presence, which is, for me anyway, such an important part of being able to contribute to other people's needs, is being able to hold a place and be open to listening without having to think I had to fix something or change something or make something different than what it is.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you. Okay. Who else would like to have some exploration or anything that came up for you in the handout? I think I'm particularly interested in identifying challenges connected to asking for support. We haven't yet looked at dependence versus independence. And we can go into making agreements, whatever speaks to you.
You had an interesting graphic, little picture in the handout. Could you say something about that? From conflict to dilemma.
What comes to me, that my understanding is, if there is a conflict, it's something that you do against someone. You're not together. There's your need and the other person needs, and you are not in agreement about it, but you're not holding it together. Can you see that?
Yes.
When we are in a listening place, we can say interdependence, like, I don't want to have my needs met at your expense, and vice versa. We are still not in agreement, but we can hold the issue together. Then it becomes a mutual dilemma. Hold it together and try to resolve it together.
And I also see that the problem is not between the people. It's not standing between them.
Exactly.
So there's a clear channel between the two people of relating to each
yes.
other.
Yes,
both,
because now we are connected. We're connected because you heard me, I heard you. There is some sense of holding the needs together. We are not yet at all in the resolution or request phase. The problem is still here. But it's between us. It's not between in the sense of separation, but held together.
I like that.
And this, of course, is the... Yeah, okay. Yes, Margaret.
The other part of this handout that I was really curious about, what I thought would be challenging for me, was holding everyone's needs with care, even when we don't fully trust that our needs are held with care.
What is challenging for you? That you don't trust that you matter? That you don't trust that your needs will get met?
Both of those things I would be worried about that, and it would make it harder for me to focus on other people's needs. I was agreeing that in a difficult situation, if I'm not fully trusting that my needs are being held with care, I would be struggling with this dialogue about what inside my head of whether I matter, and it would just make it more challenging for me to.
Or the other person with care?
Yeah.
So let's look at the internal experience, okay? Do you have a specific example, or is it just you know that it would be challenging for you?
I can't think of a really specific example.
Okay, so there is one person there, and he or she, they want something, and you want something else, and you are in a conflict, and that person seems to not be listening to your needs or caring about them, whatever form it takes, right?
Right.
So then the instinct is to fight for your needs and to dismiss the other person's needs because of the fear that your needs won't be met. Is that correct for you?
Yes.
Okay, so I think what we're trying to cultivate here is actually how to stay connected to your needs. I mean, somehow the conversation with Jo is still running in me when she said she was in her center. I think it's very easy for us to lose that place, which is the place of really, really internal dependence, I would say. It's like, how do I depend on me? How can I really trust that I'm here for me? And because we grew up so dependent, I mean, literally dependent, and so many times we were not given the acknowledgement for what we knew from inside, we lost touch with what we knew. It's like I don't hear my internal voice as easy as I did when I was a child. Is that true for you as well?
Well, I'm not sure how clear that voice was for me when I was a child either, but...
I'm talking about like until the age of 3-4. That I see children running around and they know where they're going. But until that age, there is something in us that knows what it wants and it goes there.
I think this relates to the diagram that we were talking about, that sense of perspective and partnership, and it's harder to get there if we're feeling that another person is not caring about our needs at all.
Right. So for so many years and those crucial years when the sense of self is so fresh and fragile, I mean, it's very strong inside, but very depending on how it's taken in the outside, unfortunately. And in the outside, it's not interpreted in the way that we so yearn for it to be interpreted. So we lose touch with this internal knowing and this internal wanting. Then, I think, when I come across other people, and I have this running in me that my needs don't matter to the other person, then I have to fight for them, for my existence. It's like a survival level, or it's very experiential in the body, visceral. It's not in the mind at all. It's like an instinct. It's in that place where there's scarcity of trust that I matter. How can I find in me spaciousness big enough to hold the other person's needs without thinking or fearing that I won't have space for myself? And this is the big dilemma. When we're talking about learning to trust ourselves, claiming back our power, actually. Because if I have the power, if I know that I matter to myself, even if I don't matter to the other person, out of their fear, not of my lacking of something, if I know that I matter to myself, can I gradually cultivate the ability to hold the other person with compassion? I mean, even if the other person is ignoring my needs, let's say, can I remind myself that he or she are doing it out of their desperate conditioning and not because they're mean? And when I manage to hold the other person in compassion, it's easier for me to hold my needs as well and their needs as well. Does it make sense to you?
Yes, I can imagine that in a challenging situation like that, if if I can hold on to my own sense of self and that I really matter, that I would have some ability to assert myself in expressing what my needs were and also trying to, you know, have some understanding of the other person and their needs.
Yeah. You know, it all boils down to compassion. I mean, we are all wounded, period. So very few people escape the woundedness, that I don't think there are many of us around without wounds. So if I can hold that and I can really, really, really remind myself, it can be after the effect. The whole practice in the moment is very, very difficult and very challenging in the beginning. And even as I'm more practiced and versed in NVC, it's really challenging, I find, to be in the midst of a conflict and not have my conditioning running in me, you know, the imperatives. Like, there's not enough for both of us, so I have to fight you. But if I can overcome this conditioned thinking, it's just a thinking that says there's not enough room for us, or saying that my need can be met only if you give it to me. If I can loosen up that place and I can see the difference between I have this need and you don't have to meet this need. Just this practice of separating the need from the request, so that the need does not become a demand in itself. Because when I am in a demand consciousness, I shrink. And when I shrink, there's no space. When there's no space, there's no space for holding anyone else's needs. Holding my needs is already difficult, as we said before. So then, in a very complex way, I become dependent on your reaction. So in that place, the interdependence for me gets back into dependence in the sense that I don't like, because when I am dependent and you are not there to meet my needs, this is very painful. But if I am independent from depending on you meeting my needs, for me this is independence. Independence in the sense that you don't have to meet my needs. I am really wishing for you to meet my needs, but you don't have to. That's a big separation that I love in NVC. I need other people? Yes. Do they have to meet my needs? No. Can I live in this consciousness? Rarely. Do I want to cultivate it? Yes. So when I have more and more remembering that I depend on other people, for me it's a given. The interdependence is a given. It's like between trees. We're all depending on everything. But I'm not depending on you having to meet my needs. It can be someone else. It can be in other forms. So I can stay, I can be like a tree rooted in my need without having you to be the only way to meet them. Then I can hold your needs as well. Okay, I'm done monologuing. How are you?
What you say connects with my experience. I found it helpful for my understanding. As I have become more proficient with NVC, this way of independence that Arnina describes, for the first time in my life, I really feel like an adult, like not a child anymore.
Okay, so when you say adult, what you mean? Because it's, again, when Wendy said childish, is this the opposite of adult? Because both for me might be judgmental. And I don't want to hold them as judgmental. I want to see the beauty in each one of them. Because a child has beauty and an adult has beauty. What do you mean?
Well, there's different parts to it. Part of it is just in my interaction with other people, not necessarily demanding of them to meet my needs. I think especially for young children, they don't have other ways of getting their needs met. So
yes, yes.
I just feel I have more internal resources to draw upon.
Yes, I really am celebrating that, discovering that I have more internal resources in the sense of, for me, that I can have more clarity and power just inhabiting my needs and seeing that I can have various ways for meeting them, not only one person. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. I think this is when it becomes interdependent, because it's like, you can meet my needs, you also can meet my needs. I mean, maybe not in the same intensity, but some of my needs will be met by various people.
Yeah, and I also feel a greater sense of equality with other people, and that makes the interdependent part easier.
Yes, thank you for that. I hope you're saying it with this big celebration smile.
Oh, yes. I've gotten a lot out of this course, and I'm really celebrating what a difference that has made to my life.
Yeah, I'm enjoying hearing that. Okay, so is this bringing anything up for other folks?
This is just something that I want to say about what one big thing that I've gotten across the months of this course is. I hadn't heard from my earlier readings and learning about NVC, you're really placing an emphasis on connecting with the pure need itself, not the need as being unmet or even as being met, but just the feeling of the need itself pulling us towards
them.
And I have to say that that helped me so much depend more on myself to meet my needs. And often, even the request, you know, when I can really connect with my own need, just as it is, often the specific request that I'm thinking of making sometimes even just drops away. And there's some other way I can meet my own need.
I am really, really grateful to you for saying that. Did you tell me you got it from here?
Yes, absolutely. I was still hooked into expressing, you know, the feelings connected with unmet needs in my interaction with other people.
When I discovered that thing that I call it sitting with a need,
mm-hmm.
It's like I discovered a whole dimension to NVC that I had never seen before. And it's almost like a meditation, you know, like a really spiritual practice. And it becomes physical and emotional and cellular and whatever you want to add to it, all the above. And I'm really, really, really celebrating that you're experiencing it. This is the root of self-trust, self-connection, self-discovery, and a stand from which I can really go back into interdependence and not fall into dependence in the old sense, where I cannot get my needs met. I do depend on other people, but I can just be in my needs, and they don't have to be met. Nor in a specific time, neither by a specific person or request.
I'm so grateful to you for that particular learning.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I really see this as a route for so much learning and growth as a society. Because when I'm not aware of the need and I'm not in the full presence of the need, things are blurred and I fall back into fear. Every person that discovers this can go a long way with it. The need itself is like the life power in me. So just sensing this movement in me is very big in itself. I can talk about it for hours, so I might as well stop now. So anyone else who would like to explore any other part of this section? Whatever comes up. If you have the handouts in front of you, you can look at them and see if you fill them up, or if you want to look at them now, what comes up even more now?
The piece, valuing what we have to offer sufficiently to act on our care for others, whether or not they are able to ask for support, while not supporting others as a substitute for their own self-responsibility. It's a place I would like to explore because there's such a delicate balance in this process of overriding other person's self-responsibility and that ability to listen and observe rather than just act.
Yes. I think one of the very confusing instincts is the instinct to save someone else. And when I see a person in suffering, or what I perceive as suffering, which is very different, not necessarily the exclusion each other, but they might not be the same. But when I see someone in pain, okay, even if it's not suffering, whatever, because I do make a differentiation between the two, the instinct is to go there and either help or save them. And of course, the internal emotion is care. It's really, I care for other people. I care for any being. If I don't check with them, is again the importance of the request. And I only act out of my own need to give or to contribute or to care or to save when I'm not in touch with other circumstances or beliefs, then I am not in full consciousness and choice. Because if I only go to save someone, unconsciously I have a belief there that they cannot take care of themselves or that I know what's best for them.
Is this what you talk about when you talk about cultural imperatives?
Some of it, yes. Because like a cultural imperative might say, people cannot handle their own difficulties. When someone is crying, they are in suffering, and suffering is bad. Those are all imperatives. If I inquire into my beliefs about crying, for example, I can find a whole field that I had not tapped into before, which is, who said crying is bad? Who gave this into me? So there is this, you know, that, I can't remember the name of the book, The Baby Knows, I think it's the name in English. Anyway, she speaks about the importance of letting babies cry. She might go more than I enjoy in doing that, but the main point is how important it is for us to express whatever feelings come up through crying, which like a cultural imperative would be, boys don't cry, or you're too spoiled, or you're too sensitive. So all these are beliefs that we accumulated about crying, one of which is saying crying means helpless and means I have to save them, okay? All this spectrum about crying. So when I inquire into that, then I can make more conscious choices and choiceful choices about how I want to act. And I might come to discover that my need to contribute doesn't have to be by stopping them from suffering. But, for example, being in empathy with their suffering, which would be the strategy for meeting my need for contribution without saving them from anything.
Yes, yes. And from the place of empathy and the choice to sit in a space of empathy with another, and no matter what they're going through, what happens in the process for me is that I still want to say something. I still want to be encouraging or bring some.
Why do you want to do that, Wendy? Why do you have to encourage them? I mean, I'm not saying don't. I'm just asking for clarity of consciousness.
No, I appreciate very much this interaction, because what I'm realizing is that it all comes from a place of belief within myself that this equals support, that this is how to support. This is the part that wants to relieve the suffering, to make things better, to fix things, the discomfort aspect, to relieve the discomfort.
Yeah.
It's all coming from, and this is so important for me at this point to really reflect on, is what are my intentions to clarify in consciousness.
Yes.
What I'm discovering through this process of using NBC is that the actual spaciousness of simply being, there's a quality of liveliness that is all there is. There's nothing else that is necessary.
Yes.
It's such a relief, because there, I know even in this want to fix, wanting relief, that there's this push behind it. It's that same quality. It's really not different than the feeling of resistance. It continues to support isolation. Whether it's within my own self because I am not connected at the level I truly want to be with the other person.
I love what you say. Paradoxically, when I encourage someone, it emphasizes the isolation. Yes. In effect, I did not hear the other person. I'm hearing myself. The stuff that I'm hearing is not coming from a deep place in me.
At some level, I know this. I know I'm caught in a place of being just peripherally aware. So there's this peripheral awareness, and yet I'm going through this whole process. At what point do I move into this new place of trust? And this is where the NVC comes in as a container, is that it's allowing me this new information and this new place of invoking curiosity and awareness is allowing something else to shift. That it's really very exciting.
There's another possibility, you know, when you are with another person and you catch yourself being in that shallow awareness. If you can cultivate the courage to stop and say, you know, I'm catching myself going through a ritual and I really want to reconnect on a deeper level. So is there anything that would work for you in my being with you other than what I was doing right now?
That's a very important piece, thank you, because I have a tendency to get caught in the current of the energy flow and whatever is going on, and to stop is something that, what a new possibility is that, to just stop. And
yeah.
And then the richness of the connection.
The first moment might be very shocking because, again, it's against a cultural imperative that you don't interrupt someone from whatever. But if you hold the interruption in the name of truth and connection and the potential richness that might be born out of it, and you take the risk of whatever reaction you might receive, then something so much more beautiful can be born out of it.
So that's where we go to risking significance, trusting that our actions are meaningful, and acting on our intentions to contribute.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
I was curious about power sharing and inclusive decision making, the part about connecting across power differences.
What are you curious about?
I mean, it was more of a theoretical curiosity about it because I'm trying to imagine a situation where I would actually be making a decision like with somebody who I perceive to have more power than myself, like, say, a politician or something for some campaign I'm working on. But I guess I was curious about when you say connecting across power differences, would I just act as if there weren't power differences? Like, you know, the other person is still equal.
Margaret, what is the dilemma for you? Is like how you would react, or how would you feel?
How to react?
You want to go and meet that person in person, for example?
Yes.
And if you hold like another cultural imperative, when you say someone in power, there is a whole image that comes up for you, right?
And I'm aware of that I might be struggling with that too, the how does it feel part, as well as how I react.
Okay, so for me, if I go into any situation where I have a challenge, I try as much as I can to prepare myself for the situation. I mean, if I'm actually going to meet that person, the more challenging the situation, the more I try to have time to prepare myself. And to prepare myself is to do a whole spectrum of inner translation. Like, take myself and see myself through what are my needs, regardless of the other person's any possible actions or reactions or power. just as we were talking throughout the conversation and before, just to have a sense, a full sense, as much as I can, of what is important to me in the situation. What is it that I'm after when I go to meet that person? This is one thing. The other thing, actually, if I have an image, which in this case for me is an enemy image, of a politician that has more power than I do, sometimes I want to assign that power to the person. I want that person to be in charge, which is sometimes easier other than when the person is taking the power over. But let's say it's not as demanding as this. So this person is a politician. I want to go talk to him or her. And I do with myself some inner work to dissolve the image. What I'm looking for is what is human in that particular person in power. So I keep reminding myself that no matter what this person is in the scale, the human scale, the scale that humans invented, better said, that person is also a human being. So what might his or her needs be when they do actions that I so much don't agree with? Let's say this person doesn't take care of the environment and you really want to go do something about it. If you approach that person from either a fear position and you give up after 2 minutes, or you approach that person from a punitive position that doesn't see him or her as human beings, in both cases you're not living the interdependence because you're giving up on something. But if you come from, again, a compassionate perspective, then the word power has transformed, I think, already. Tell me what you either hear or feel when I say all that.
Yeah, I've struggled with both of those things, the fear perspective and a punitive, you know, enemy perspective.
So are you gaining any new insights from what I just said that can serve you?
Just being aware of it's easy, I can fall into those things, can help me to try to refocus on them as a human being.
Yes. What a discovery, huh?
Yeah, it can be so hard, though, sometimes. In my experience, if, depending on the type of personality they have, if they act as if they have this expectation that you are supposed to defer to them and their power or whatever they decide.
Yes.
I had this particular problem with
just imagining that person going to the toilet. They do that, you know. They go to bed, they snore, they eat, they do everything, and they have some behaviors that you're not feeling comfortable around. Okay. So this is like practicing muscles that are not very comfortable, but they're practicable. And even imagining that when you approach that person, not being intimidated, that might contribute to that person because they might feel very lonely in their power. They might want some partnership and understanding. Can you imagine that?
Well, in theory, although I have a hard time with this particular person, just how they project. I mean, maybe it's partly my perception, although I've had this experience with a couple people, not all politicians, that, somehow you're not worthy or you're lesser than them. And then it's just very easy for me to fall into, that type of thinking.
Of course. We've been wounded by people, but there's so much healing in the possibility of seeing them as humans in spite of their behavior. It's like they might not see their humanity, but I can see that. They might be disconnected from themselves, but I can connect. I mean, I can practice.
The strategy then would be to what? To act as if they were my equal?
Not exactly act as if. It's like the strategy would be to practice internally. It's like what I had in mind when we were talking, I was imagining you or me, it doesn't matter, going somewhere where these people sit and sit close to them and just internally practicing opening my heart to them, or even imagining being in their vicinity where there is discomfort, to come every time that I imagine that, I come one step closer to them in my imagination, okay? And really try to inhabit them inside of me as human beings, whatever that means in that moment, very slowly and gently. Imagine them as children. They were children once. Just for me to come in touch with the humanity, because that is the chance for opening my heart again to other fellow humans. Make sense to you?
Yeah, it's helpful to me. I've actually had a horrible experience where I actually was sitting next to a politician at a luncheon, and he basically refused to talk to me. So just even like getting this person's attention was challenging, and then this person would just talk to the person on the other side of her and not to me. And then finally, I was able to engage her in a brief conversation, but it was very difficult. And what made it even worse was because we were in a different city far away from where we usually are. Yeah, I guess for me to imagine something about her, you know, I don't know exactly why she would treat me like that. I felt like she thought I was not worth talking to.
Hold on a second. You say you felt like you were not worth talking to? Not true. That's what you thought.
Oh, I know.
No, I mean you know. I mean you know, of course, but it's so easy to forget. It's like you wanted so much to matter and to be seen. And it was not happening. But
yeah.
Does that mean that you're not worth talking to? Can you see that that's a whole story you made up many years ago?
Yes, and I can see that more clearly now. This actually happened before I was introduced to MVC. You know, just to revisit the situation now, I mean, it's actually, when I think about it, it was pretty strange behavior. What could be going on with her that she would do that?
Yeah, I can only imagine so much self-disconnection, which is, after all, so painful, that she doesn't even see others. I mean, she cannot see others because she's not in touch with who she is inside. Like, she is totally in the role or something like that.
Yeah.
In the role as it's supposed to be. It's double disconnection. The role can be full of meaning.
Yeah, she's supposed to be this powerful person who doesn't talk to ordinary people like me or something.
Exactly. Like the whole story of important people, whatever that is, important people should act in a certain way that gives the significance to the role. So she was acting the full act.
I was just thinking about this connection and it got disconnected. Amazing. So where were we?
You were with Margaret, and Margaret was actually just saying that she felt complete at the time that you dropped off.
Yeah, and then as Dot introduced another question.
Shivani suggested we continue to explore interdependence. I was reflecting on that page in Interdependence Transcending Self-Sufficiency. The very first question, what thoughts, images, or reactions do I have to the word independence? I went into a place where I'm thinking, okay, independence means self-sufficiency, independent, actually immediately caused me to become acutely aware of my interdependence. So then I was caught in this place in recognizing that there really is no such thing as independence, that it is from a cultural imperative perspective, because I am interdependent no matter what. If I say that, okay, independence for me means that I own my own home, I'm making a good salary, no, I'm not dependent on anyone else to pay my bills, I'm making all my own decisions, all of that isolates me. I am, at the same time, I'm interdependent on all aspects of whether it's a place where I'm working, where I'm earning a salary.
Yes.
I'm interdependent. I at least see this whole web.
I think that the independence is, I think I said it before, is like the independence from depending on other people
having to meet my need. It just living in a consciousness of asking, of requesting, in acceptance that I am in need of other people, but I don't depend on a specific person or action to meet those needs.
That touches me in a place in my heart that I feel like tears start to come, and it's this relief.
Mm.
It's a feeling of relief to recognize this and what power there is in the recognition that I am interdependent and the power of choice to choose to recognize that place of the actual independence comes from a feeling of freedom, the inner freedom of realizing that I can hold my unmet needs with compassion, and I can feel a self-sufficiency and a clarity and a freedom around choosing to meet my needs, and then to request, to ask that my needs get met, which is such a clear connection to myself and to the other that I am connecting with. It's a gift of requesting that needs be met and a willingness to meet the needs or not. And the power of realizing, well, it's okay if my needs don't get met.
Yes, that's the self-sufficiency. I can contain my needs not being met. I mean, this is a little underestimating self-sufficiency in the positive sense, I mean. Self-sufficiency not in the sense that our culture tends to direct us into. Like, you have to learn to be self-sufficient in a way that, when it comes from scarcity and all that. But if I can be self-sufficient in the sense that I am sufficient for myself to love myself, for example, that would be grand. I don't need your approval of me to love me. I would love that. I would enjoy you loving me, but I don't depend on that. I'm self-sufficient in the sense that I can sense my love inside of me. I mean, I'm still aspiring to that, not that I got there already.
Yeah, so it's very much like self-responsibility, self-sufficiency, self-responsibility.
In the sense that we're talking now. I don't get lost in needing other people. In that sense, I am self-sufficient. I don't lose myself.
I can truly sense the clarity around this.
A different ground to dance on.
Yes.
So are we done for today? Wow, beautiful. Thank you so much. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.